from the Midtown Detroit studios of WDET. This is Detroit Today.
The plans to widen I-75 between 8 Mile and M-59 in Oakland County were a centerpiece of County Executive Brooks Patterson's State of the County address last week. But do highway expansions really relieve congestion and spur economic development? We'll hear from Patterson and his critics, and then we'll talk with a national expert about what happens in other cities. Plus, we'll have our weekly education segment with Bridge Magazine's Chastity Pratt Dossey. We'll get the conversation started next on Detroit Today, but first, the news. Welcome to Detroit Today on 101.9 WDET. I'm Stephen Henderson, and thanks for being here. Oakland County Executive L. Brooks Patterson announced during his State of the County address that the state plans to expand a stretch of I-75 to four lanes. This is between 8 Mile and M-59. The announcement has met with applause that night, but there was also an immediate negative reaction online from some Democrats in Oakland County who say the project is unnecessary. And I also wrote a column in the Detroit Free Press over the weekend that said this is doubling down on the kind of sprawl and deurbanization that plagues Metro Detroit. Democrats have said that the plan to expand a suburban stretch of highway is archaic and will use millions of dollars that could be better spent elsewhere. Could we use that, for instance, on rail? Could we use it on high-speed buses? Could we use it to sort of more urbanize some places, make more walkable communities, and the kinds of things that we are seeing crop up in other communities? So today I want to talk to both sides of the issue, and then a little later we're going to welcome a national expert on this question. First, I want to welcome Dave Woodward, who is an Oakland County Commissioner, a Democrat from Royal Oak, to Detroit Today. Dave, welcome to the studio.
Stephen, thanks for having me.
Yeah, so tell me about what your objections are to this project.
Well, sure. I mean, I think you summarized some of it.
We are on the same side of this.
Yeah, I think we are aligned in our view of this. I mean, I think you look at this project and freeway expansion projects like this as a utter epic waste of money, and there are plenty of other better options to invest in our transportation infrastructure that revitalizes and sustains vitalization of our already built out cities and communities around the region. And I was there at the State of the County address. I heard. That announcement, and I'll tell you, it was akin to hearing Brooks Patterson bring back Tower Records and a celebration of recruiting a Walkman factory. It is such an archaic, old-century approach to transportation policy that, and frankly, is detrimental to our future.
Yeah. One of the things that I came across in reading about freeways, highways, their expansion, things like that, is some studies that show that the main goal of this, which is relief of congestion. We always say, look, I-75 is, of course, a nightmare if you're traveling north and south. It seems like from about, 2 p.m. till the sun goes down, there's a lot of traffic, and it's really hard to get through. The idea behind widening the freeway, of course, is that it'll relieve that congestion. But, of course, there are these studies that suggest that doesn't really happen.
It's never happened. I mean, that's exactly that. It was the rhetoric to justify it, but it doesn't happen. I mean, my grandparents' property bordered up against 696. And I can remember looking down this giant crater being built, and everyone saying, this is going to relieve all this congestion.
I think most
area.
People our age who grew up here in the metro area have memories of that being worked on for a very long time.
For a long time, it's not going to reach full capacity for many, many, many years. And 6 months later, oops. And because there's this phenomenon that occurs that is research-based, evidence-based of induced demand. And you create the space, you're going to create the traffic. And frankly, it's all of that that is the ingredients that underwrite frankly, subsidize urban sprawl.
Yeah.
And that's long-term cost and consequence to all of us, because there's new infrastructure demand, there's all these other things at the time that we can't afford fixing the infrastructure that we currently have.
Yeah. This is Detroit Today on 101.9 WDET. I'm Stephen Henderson. My guest is Dave Woodward, an Oakland County Commissioner, a Democrat from Royal Oak. He and I are talking about the plans to expand I-75, add two lanes between 8 Mile and M59. L. Brooks Patterson, Oakland County executive, made this one of the centerpieces of his State of the County address last week. He says it's about economic development and also traffic congestion relief. Dave Woodward and some other county Democrats say that's not what's going to happen, and that this is sort of old school transit policy and urban development. Give us a call, 313-577-1019, to tell us what you think. Do you travel on I-75 now, north and south in Oakland County, and think it's a mess? Do you support the idea of widening the highway to get more lanes? Do you think that will relieve traffic? And talk about urban versus suburban development. Do freeways and highways like I-75, do they encourage sprawl or do they encourage economic development? Again, the number is 313-577-1019. That's 313-577-1019. Dave Woodward, I want to ask you about sort of the history here in this community. There, highways are not just about transit and transportation policy here. They have been about housing. They have been about communities. I-75 in particular has a very nefarious history here in the city of Detroit, where its construction back in the 1950s destroyed African-American neighborhoods. It's not the only freeway that did that. The Lodge, 96, 94, all of these things have impact on the people who live in this community and who live in the city. We don't seem to ever talk about that history when we talk about expansion, and I think that's something of a disconnect.
Well, I talk about it often. I'm glad that you bring that up, because this post-industrial transportation approach has hurt our urban centers across America. It is actually the antithesis of investing in our downtowns, investing in our main streets. It is about trying to move people out of our urban centers faster, further and further away, and has resulted in a lack of investment in these very same things. And when we talk about, and there's a number of instances we can draw to in the immediate past here of what disinvestment in our infrastructure produces. This is, to me, it's a fundamental ingredient that's causing that. One thing I also take exception with our county executives, that he talked about I-75 being Oakland County's Main Street. It is the absolute opposite of a Main Street. Everything about it is an opposite of a Main Street. And I might be biased, but I'll take some exception that the real Main Street of Oakland County is Woodward Avenue that connects city centers and everything. But I realize I might be biased on that. But that definition, supporting your central business districts in your local communities, connecting a region, that's a Main Street.
And if
approach.
You were doing that, if you were thinking about Woodward Avenue that way, for instance, we would be doing different things on that street.
Absolutely.
Look at the width of Woodward, not just in the Oakland County, but throughout the city, really discourages the kind of walking and shopping and sort of density that you have in other places. And the fact that there's just no mass transit associated with Woodward, or I shouldn't say no mass transit. Of course,
limited.
SMART runs up and down, and in the city, DDOT does sort of overlaps SMART, but not the kind of mass transit that would really encourage lots of people to rely on it.
Right. And that's a big piece of this, is that, this area, we have a transit system that is built for those who have to use it. And it's limited at best to even support that, and not the choice rights. I actually relied on public transit. I was born and raised in Royal Oak. I went to Wayne State. I took the bus back and forth. It was, the easiest, for the route I was on, reliable. But if we develop a reliable, safe public transit system, more people will use it. We know that will happen. I think the regional Regional Transit Authority, proposals coming forth to look at that, bus rapid transit, expansion of service, all of those types of things are part of it. But we've really, I mean, you're right, we have absolutely ignored and not invested in those strategies over time. And there's a huge opportunity to do so. And that's... And so when I take, I mean, great exception to this, like, let's pour, I mean, invest $1 billion into this widening project over the next 20 years. This is, embracing century-old thinking that is actually contrary to the trends of today. And frankly, what a young, talented workforce and business wants today. They want walkable communities, livable communities. They want a multiple transportation strategies available to them to make choices. The day of someone willing to embrace a 45-minute commute each way is passing.
People are absolutely not.
And we actually see the trend. People are driving less. They're choosing not to do that anymore. And so this type of project, frankly, is just, I mean, in my opinion, it's a boondoggle of investment that could better be used to fix our existing freeway. I mean, the way this conversation, I'm a little disturbed about how it's talked about, because I mean, I know it was Brooks that talked about it in Oakland County State of the County address, but our region's freeway system is in need of significant repair, bridges, fixing roads, improving safety. And so, I mean, these are dollars coming in that can be available. And just doing those things would be a much better use of those investments instead of, frankly, investing in infrastructure that, frankly, we have demonstrated we don't have the money to maintain.
Yeah, yeah. I want to welcome to the conversation now the man who trumpeted this three-way expansion last week as part of his State of the County address. Brooks Patterson is the 6-time elected executive of Oakland County. Also announced in that speech, he will run for a 7th term. Brooks Patterson, welcome to Detroit Today.
Good morning, Stephen. How are you?
Good. It's good to hear you. Let's talk about this I-75 expansion. You and I was talking before the show, you and I taped an episode of Flashpoint, the show, the news talk show on WDIV on Friday. Of course, it didn't air because Justice Scalia died on Saturday and the show had to be redone live. But in the taped version of the show, you and I had a little bit of a disagreement over I-75. I said that this was doubling down on sprawl, and you had a really interesting retort to that.
I've heard that argument before, and I say one man's sprawl is another man's economic development.
Right.
And I went on to say that if you got it, you call it economic development. If you don't call it, you don't have it, then you've used a pejorative like sprawl or something else. I don't think it's sprawl at all. I think it's a realization that it's the business expressway in Michigan that has not been in any meaningful way maintained for close to 50 years. It was built in the 60s. And that most of the money that's going to be spent in this project is not to add the lane. That's only 10%. The 90% balance is going to be used to completely renovate all the lanes, fix the bridges that are starting to decay, in some cases barely hanging on, and re-educate or redesign some of the exits so people don't have to make turns that start in the right lane all the way to the left. They're just looking for an accident there. So there's been a lot of improvements in design and the implementation of expressways that we can now enjoy with a rebuild 50 years later.
Yeah. Talk about the sort of choice making here, though, and on a regional basis. I mean, we seem to invest a lot in highways like I-75, their rebuild and their expansions at the same time that we don't seem to be able to get started with the kind of sensible mass transit. You have in the past had some really interesting things to say about mass transit and choice. That if I remember correctly, you believe that people here don't really want the kind of mass transit that they have in other cities, and that's why we don't have it.
Well, I think that's true. People are demanding trains and what do I call it, the M1 kind of a track. The state would respond, I think, to the demands of the electorate and the taxpayers. And we're going to have an RTA, Regional Transit Authority, which I have signed off on.
Yes.
As have the other execs in the Big Four and so forth. We've got a plan we signed off on, but it has a funding component. is going to be voted on by the taxpayers. Now, we'll see who's right, Steve, you or me. If the taxpayers voted down, that's going to tell you
something. Do you think the taxpayers will vote down the RTA funding?
Oh, I wouldn't be surprised at all. It's another tax, and most people will never ride that so-called light rail that this is going to fund. And I'm not a big proponent of light rail because it goes from one point to one point to the next point, and there's no way to turn left or turn right, and you pick up people and housing patterns and jobs. It's very narrow in its application. If I rode a subway or a light rail to downtown Detroit, I'd have to get a Uber to take me to my job site because I may work a mile and a half off the route. So how does that help me?
Well, I mean, but don't you see the contrast between what we're doing here in Detroit and the metro area and say, a community like Chicago or even Baltimore, a much smaller city than Detroit? These are places where people are able to use mass transit, connecting between buses and rail or subways, things like that, to get around. What is it about Detroit and the metro area that you think just doesn't work for that kind of transit?
Well, the jobs are spread out over almost a tri-county, but for sure, Oakland. I mean, we have as much east-west traffic as we do north-south. Yeah. So in these communities that you just mentioned, there is a density of employment in the city. So people will get on the train or subway, whatever it is, light rail, and take it to the job. We don't have that in this area. I mean, people in Oakland County, we work all over the place, and that's the problem with the track. A track can't go all over the place, and so you're going to have to, I really think what you're going to have in spite of a subway or light rail, you're probably going to have a upgraded a bus system.
The bus rapid transit. Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. Okay. Let's take some calls here for L. Brooks Patterson, Oakland County Executive, and Dave Woodward, an Oakland County Commissioner, a Democrat from Royal Oak. Tim and Troy, you're first up. Detroit Today. Welcome to the show.
Hi there. Hi. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Hey, doing good. So I guess my question is, I actually lived in North Chicago when I was a kid, and I remember always taking the bus into Chicago, and my dad actually worked in the suburbs, and we would go downtown Chicago all the time. My uncles worked downtown, so I just don't understand. Now I live in Troy, and I don't understand. We have a lot of the infrastructure in place as far as the rail. It's just a matter of funding, actual getting train cars and that type of thing going downtown. Is it just that the interest actually isn't there, or is the interest actually there and the simple resources aren't there to make it happen?
Right. Well, I think that's an interesting question, Tim. It's about how we plan and what we prioritize in terms of the way we fund it. Tim, tell me this. You live in Troy. Where do you work?
So actually, I'll be attending Wayne State.
Okay.
And my goal is to get down there, but it's a pain in the butt to get down.
I was going to say, I mean, that's a pretty hairy commute. So you would take I-75 to get from Troy down to Wayne State. Does the idea of more lanes, and my understanding is that there's a possibility that that these lanes will be HOV lanes, so-called carpool lanes. Does that appeal to you as someone who lives in the suburbs and will be commuting to the city?
No, we're a one-car family. So right now, as a student, I got one car. My wife takes it to work every single day. I rely on public transit to get around.
Yeah.
So to me, the idea of having a train or something like that to go back and forth, because the jobs, yeah, I agree, the jobs are in Oakland County.
Yeah.
But as far as, it's just, it seems really disconnected. So,
okay. Yeah.
That's my story.
Okay. Thank you very much for that call, Tim. Let's go to Elizabeth in Detroit. Elizabeth, welcome to Detroit Today.
Yes, hello, and hello to your guests.
Uh-huh.
With all due respect to Mr. Patterson, you've got a good track record on other things, but this project, I thought you had more imagination, and this lacks imagination. Now,
I look at a track, and it goes from point A to point B. There's no deviation as work patterns housing patterns change. You're still locked into that rail. Those who don't know their history, I think they're doomed to repeat it. We had the Grand Trunk Railroad system back in the mid-80s. It ran from Pontiac down to the Renaissance Center, even though the Renaissance wasn't quite built at that point in time. And the ridership, now this is back in the 80s now, when the city had a higher density and more jobs than it does today, density of population and more jobs. And in the 80s, the ridership on this Grand Trunk that started in Pontiac went all the way to Detroit, fell below 500 passengers. And so the Grand Trunk said, we're losing money, we need a subsidy. The population said, we're not going to pay for this train. You built it, you run it, but we're not going to fund it.
Right.
So they closed. The Grand Trunk took, I think it was called the Silver Bullet, something like that.
Sure.
And they sold the right-of-way to a Canadian railway, and they're out of business. That was a commuter line, strictly commuters.
So
now 50 years later, we want to...
We're going to do it again, right? That's a good point. Dave Woodward, Oakland County Commissioner, have we heard from the people of Metro Detroit in a way that says we don't want mass transit and we won't support it? And Elizabeth, I want to quickly thank you for your call and your comments. But Dave Woodward, go ahead.
Thank you. And as much as I respect our county executive, I mean, I think he's, I mean, off the mark here. The reality is we have a Swiss cheese approach to public transit. It's political leadership that has blocked our ability to build a comprehensive public transit system that can meet the needs of choice riders, those who don't have to ride. Your previous caller, the one-car family, my mom, my sister, and I, we were like the one car sharing that, and when Dad took the other car to work. So that, with all due respect, I mean, Brooks has been opposed to supporting all communities being part of the smart system in Oakland County. That would connect the areas. The reality is that I believe the voters absolutely want this. I believe that young people, the young talented workforce that Brooks himself, I mean, wants to actively attract into county government, to Oakland County, because I mean they're critical. I like to think I may be aging out, but I mean, in that group, are critical to our future and critical to business. They want these options and availability to be able to do this in today's time. And this century-old thinking of building more freeway, we've done it. The definition of insanity is continuing to do the same thing and expecting a different result. It is only going to further foster the decimation of our downtowns.
Yeah.
And it's what freeways have done.
You know what, guys? I
finished high
school. And I do not understand how you can blame an expressway for the decimation of the city. You know, I heard Steve say, well, they put the faster route out of town. Well, I could have taken Woodward. I could have taken Gratiot. I could have taken any route out of town. And an expressway doesn't cause people to flee the city. We got a lot of other route problems in the city that cause people to leave.
Well, sure, but the freeways make it a lot easier. And the way that we have carved the city up here with freeways. I mean, you go to other communities. There are not as many freeways that cut through the middle of the city as we have here. We have five that come through the center of the city of Detroit that make it easy to get east, west, and north. And there was planning policy that accompanied that sort of incentivized people to leave the urban core. And I'm not extracting choice out of that. I'm saying that policy has helped drive that choice. Brooks, I want to quickly ask you before we move on to the next segment. Do you plan to support the RTA funding in
November? I've already signed off on the program.
Yeah.
I'm not taking a position on the tax increase, however. That's really up to the voters. And if they want to tax themselves, all right, fine, I'll go along with the program. If they don't, that's fine too. We'll make the best of the situation. I got to go back and correct Dave on one point. There's been like three or four smart millages since the smart system was inaugurated. I've been leading every one of those tax increases. I have not ducked my responsibility. And smart, of course, did have opt-out provision where some communities opt out. That wasn't me. That's the county board where Dave serves created the opt-out provision. And so they created a situation where communities that didn't think the service they were going to get enough for their money opted out. That was an amendment put in at the board level, not by Brooks.
You didn't do that. Okay.
But at the same time, Brooks, you did not support all of Oakland County being in SMART.
I don't, Dave. I don't even remember when that happened. I don't think I was the exec at the time. I think they replaced Simca, Southeast Michigan Transit.
Right, when we had the old Suburban.
So I wasn't involved in these issues.
Okay, Dave Woodward, Oakland County Commissioner, Democrat from Royal Oak, Brooks Patterson, Oakland County Executive. Thank you for being here on Detroit Today.
Always a pleasure talking to you.
Yes,
Dave,
I'll talk to you soon.
Thank you.
All right, coming up next, we're going to talk about whether highway expansions do congest the roadways or whether they contribute to sprawl. We're going to talk about it in a national context with the president, CEO, and publisher of nextcity.org. Stay with us on Detroit Today and stay on the phones, 313-577-1019. You're listening to Detroit Today on 101.9 WDET. I'm Stephen Henderson, and thanks for being here. You know, around densely populated cities like Los Angeles and Honolulu, there are highways that are often six lanes wide to supposedly help with the flow of traffic. But people in those cities will tell you about hours-long commutes to go short distances and bumper-to-bumper frustration nearly all day long. Motorcyclists zoom between lanes of stop-and-go traffic, and carpool lanes are the only lanes that seemed to move at all. So what works? Of course, we can think of other communities where people don't rely so much on highways and have much better public transit. So what's the answer? Does expanding a highway help in some sprawling cities, or are there other investments that are wise for decongestion and urbanization? I want to welcome Tom D'Alessio, who's the president, CEO, and publisher of nextcity.org, to Detroit Today to talk about this. Tom, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much.
Yeah. So I always get the sense that, and this is not just from reading, but it's also from living in other places. I lived in Chicago, I lived in Baltimore, and worked in Washington, all places that have a much different approach to transit than we do here in Detroit. I have always been under the impression that we're sort of in the dark ages here when it comes to these things, and that other cities are thinking more creatively. And a project like widening the main sort of north-south artery, highway artery here, to two lanes is an example of the sort of delayed sort of thinking that's at play here, that other cities are approaching this from different vantage points. Tell me whether I'm right or wrong about that, Tom.
Well, we are seeing a new exploration of how people can actually move around and how governments are looking at mobility. And so the old tried and true forms of, if you're looking to move people quickly, you just build another lane of highway, is being rethought in a number of contexts. Agencies on the city, state, and federal level are all thinking a bit about economic development. They're thinking about the environment. They're thinking about safety in particular. And they're finding alternative solutions to building that additional lane. By way of example, in Minnesota, they're actually looking at beautifying the highway as a way of getting people to actually get off the highways to stop and actually shop or, you know, find opportunities for recreation, et cetera. So if you have a choice of being on an eight-lane highway or being on a two- or three-lane highway with trees and grass and opportunities to get off and do things, which are you going to choose?
Right.
And I think the wiser people are starting to think about, well, how does this work? Well, that has to then be reconciled with how you actually move people. And traffic engineers have found that it's not how fast people can go that you can move the most people. It's not how many lanes you can actually do. It's actually a combination of smart thinking and technology to say that sometimes the best solution is not a six-lane highway that can go 65 miles an hour to move the most people. Sometimes it's a two- or three-lane highway, or maybe it's separated lanes that you go through that are maybe at 35 to 50 miles an hour that can then actually move more people.
Yeah. Talk about the relationship between this kind of planning, transit planning, transportation, and urbanization. I said earlier in the show that the history of I-75 and the other freeways here in Detroit is the sort of a move away from the urban core. And there were lots of reasons that happened. Of course, race and class enter into the picture when you start talking about those things. But at their center, those policies and the building, the construction of these highways really was a facilitator of the the eradication of density in the urban core. Are other cities managing that better than we are here?
Well, I think the best cities are doing, and when I say the best cities, it's really led by the best mayors who are thinking about what's happening. They're engaging their community, and they're finding more about what's actually happening. So Next City just ran a piece on our new mayor in Philadelphia, Jim Kenney, who may be the first millennial mayor. He's starting to listen to who are the people that are moving into Philadelphia and are actually living in Philadelphia. They are younger people. And when you start to talk to younger people, you hear a different story than what we used to hear from baby boomers and folks who are in their 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s, and 90s. You know, the greatest generation that fought World War II came back to America in the 40s and 50s and 60s and decided that we really needed to build highways to give people more options to live out in the suburbs.
Yeah.
Well, that was great, and it led to a good lifestyle for a number of people. But when you talk to millennials today, many of them don't have those aspirations. Many of them don't even have driver's licenses.
Right, right.
It's amazing to me. They want to live in urban environments. They want to be able to walk to places. And they're thinking about the environment. They're thinking about where they actually spend their time and working and playing. And it's a different lifestyle. And I think those elected and appointed officials who are still stuck in the mindset of even the 1980s or 1990s are up for a rude awakening in the next 10 to 15 years because there's a different generation that's making different choices.
Yeah. Let's take some calls here. Sam in Rochester, welcome to Detroit Today.
Hi, thanks so much for taking my call.
Sure.
It turns out that we've lived in a lot of the same cities. So I'm not originally from here, but prior to living here, my husband and I lived in Durham, North Carolina, and previous to that it was Baltimore, Maryland, and Chicago, Illinois.
Oh, well,
but,
yeah, right.
Yeah. So, but anyways, what strikes me as so unfortunate about this expenditure to expand the freeways is that it seems redundant, it doesn't seem to work, and I feel as though perhaps people who live in Oakland County have never actually lived anywhere else, because if they had, I think that they would see that there are many other solutions, trains and buses, and if I was personally going to spend that money, I'd want to see functional bike lanes like what they have in the Netherlands. I would love to see some kind of infrastructure like that that supports a reduction in obesity and it gets people outside, because the thing that kills me about living here is that I spend an inordinate amount of time in my car.
Right. Sam, let me ask you this. You live in Rochester. If we were doing something like that, would it make you think about having to live closer? I mean, one of the problems we have here is how big the metro area is and has gotten. I mean, there's a lot of people who live in, the middle or northern of Oakland County. That's a long way from the density that we would try to create in the city. Do you see a possibility to, how would that work for someone like you?
So the only reason we live in Rochester is because my husband has an academic appointment. And so it just made more sense rather than living anywhere else, uh-huh, given the commute that he would have to face. But we talk about this endlessly. And I say, if there was a functional transportation system, I would live downtown. I would live right downtown in Detroit, because for a little while when we first moved here, I was working right in Midtown, and it was lovely. I loved working there. I hated getting there, but it didn't seem very fair to my husband, because he would be the one who'd be commuting more between the two of us, to have him face such a long and treacherous commute, especially with these terrible winters.
Uh-huh.
So for that reason, that's why we live here, because it's close to where we work, because the two of us abhor driving. If we didn't have such a commute, absolutely, I'd live right downtown. I mean, I'm excited about what's going on, and I'd like to participate in it, but it's very difficult when you live in Rochester.
Sure.
It's just,
and transit might make that a little easier, mass transit.
Yeah, I think it would, and I would love to see that happen, because
yeah,
I have a 3-year-old, and I would love for her to have a more of a cosmopolitan life and to interact with various parts of the city as opposed to being quarantined, because
yeah,
it feels like we're quarantined.
Wow, that's
up there.
A strong word, Sam.
Yeah. Well,
all right, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much for the call. Let's go to Tim on the west side of Detroit. Tim, welcome
hey
to Detroit Today.
Am I on?
Uh-huh.
Mr. Anderson?
You are.
All right, great. Thanks for taking my call.
Uh-huh.
I really want to reference my statements to your prior callers, guests, rather. I'm inclined to agree with Mr. Woodward, because in this time waiting, I've kind of felt as though those dollars, or even a fraction of what's going to be proposed for that debacle for northern Oakland County, could be better spent between Wayne, Oakland, and Macomb, a working model, a poll, some research, some surveys as to what can we do to better offset this traffic sprawl and do what your caller just suggested, bike trails, transportation, HOVs, maybe some mass transportation. Because if we all recall 20 years ago, from, I guess, North Line down to Monroe, I-75 North and South Southern was expanded. It's faster, it's smoother, it's nicer now. But how many collisions and crashes have we had now because the truck traffic and the vehicular traffic is tremendously increased? Mr. Patterson's idea only works because he's never had the challenges, let's just say, of a Chrysler leaving a Highland Park or a total bankruptcy of the city. Oakland County is very wealthy. Those who live out there follow the throng of Brooks Patterson with their eyes blindfolded because he has left the city of Detroit years ago stating, come with me and I'm very pro-Oakland County. The rest of you, I could care less.
Yeah. Yeah.
So as long as nobody challenges him, he can say, hey, I can paint the sky pink.
Well,
just give me a few hundred million dollars.
And to be fair, I mean, people in Oakland County and throughout the metro area seem to choose along the lines of what Brooks Patterson is talking about. I mean, the choices we make against transit and mass transit sort of reinforce the point of view that he's forwarding.
Well,
it's not just him, I guess, is my point.
It's all of us. I'm not putting the blame on him, but it is a shame that our local, be Democratic or Republican, political body in this region is beholden to the auto industry.
Yeah.
We have a fairly dense
that,
population
right?
here, such as Washington, D.C., which is only 10 miles long, but yet it serves Virginia, the Baltimore region, hundreds of thousands in and out. They've got a very extensive underground subway system. Why can't we do something even halfway like that for the density of the population that we serve? Cuts down on gas, cuts down on air pollution, cuts down on other fatalities on the freeways, and it does give spaces, sprawling areas to expand.
Yeah. All right, Tim, thank you very much for your call. Tom D'Alessio, President, CEO, and publisher of nextcity.org. Let me ask you, what are the first steps that communities take when they're trying to sort of undo this sort of morass of highways and sprawl and cities sort of far flung from one another. Is it that the people decide to do something different and it comes from there, or do you need the leadership to sort of say, hold on a second, let's rethink this?
Well, the most effective situations require both. And so we've seen top-down planning and bottom-up planning. But to be truthful on this, you really need to have both situations happen. So the most successful situations are such that you have the resources and the determination on the top-down level, whether it be from the national, state, or from the city level, and then you actually have communities that are engaged in a planning process, and they actually identify, in particular, using maps, using pictures and different examples, how they want their community to be fashioned.
Yeah.
Now, the one challenge in all of this is how do you create a regional network? Because obviously most people would like to live in a very bucolic situation and minimize the amount of asphalt as possible. The question then is how do you move people and what are the trade-offs? And so one of the things that we're encouraging folks to think a bit about is what are the new technologies and the new opportunities that are coming back? So, everything old is new again. Bicycles are coming back in a big way.
Yes, they are.
That's great. But there are also things like driverless cars that may be changing the future. We're looking at situations where we might have personal rapid transit or other ways to move people. So we may not even need the 5, 6, 7, 8-lane highways anymore to be able to move people.
Yeah. Okay. Tom D'Alessio, President, CEO, and publisher of nextcity.org. Thanks very much for being here on Detroit Today.
Thank you for your time.
Yeah. When we come back, we're going to have our weekly education segment with Bridge Magazine's Chastity Pratt Dossie. We're going to talk about Governor Rick Snyder's plan for schools in Detroit in his latest budget proposal, schools in Detroit, schools all over the state. We'll also talk about the charter schools. What's going on with holding them accountable? Stay with us on Detroit Today. You're listening to Detroit Today on 101.9 WDET. I'm Stephen Henderson, and thanks for being here. Every week, we welcome Bridge Magazine reporter Chastity Pratt-Dossie to the studio to talk about education. Education in the city of Detroit, education around the state of Michigan. This week, we are going to talk about charter authorizers and some gray areas in the governor's proposed school budget. Chastity, welcome to the show.
Hello, hello.
Yeah, and joining us this week by phone is Amber Arellano, who's the executive director of Education Trust Midwest. Amber, welcome to Detroit Today. Amber, are you there?
I am. Good morning.
There you are. All righty. Welcome to Detroit Today. Let's start with you, Amber. You recently wrote a piece about charter schools. And what was interesting to me about this piece versus the others that I've read about what charter schools do in Michigan is it really does talk about Michigan in the context of other states. How do other states deal with charter schools? Of course, they're not unique to the state of Michigan. Lots of states have gone down this road. We just seem to have done it in a different way than most other people.
That's right. Yeah, it's really, you know, when we look at states like Massachusetts, where students by third grade are outpacing our kids by almost 3 years of instruction, which is really incredible when you think about it.
Yeah.
And you look at a state like that and, you know, top of the country, one of the, if it was its own country, it would be top six in the world. And you look at Michigan, we're now in the bottom 10 states in the country, right, in many subjects and indicators. And you look at the really the trajectories of those states and then really what brought us here. One of the differences is the lack of accountability for performance in Michigan. And that's true for traditional public schools, but it's also been true for charter authorizers. You know, we've taken an approach that we just simply don't hold charter authorizers accountable, including when they have chronically low performance. So we have authorizers that have now been in operation for well over 10, 15 years. They have many, many chronically failing schools, and we don't have any mechanisms to say to them, you know, if you don't dramatically improve, we're going to shut you down. Not even the governor can do that. So that's a really big difference, say, compared to a state like Massachusetts, where they have very strong and very high performance standards for their operators. They have an ability to set those standards and then hold those schools accountable when they don't perform. And then there's a, you know, there's mechanisms in place to ensure that the state plays its role in ensuring that the sector is of high quality. And so we see in places like Boston where the charter sector is far outperforming the traditional public schools, we don't see that in a place like Detroit. We do see that in a handful of charter schools, and kudos to them. We need many, many more of those high performers. Unfortunately, there are just many, many more charter schools that are actually underperforming even Detroit public schools. So it's a startling picture when you kind of stand back and look at our sector compared to other state sectors.
So, Amber, it sounds as if it's a two-pronged problem. Other states such as Massachusetts, first off, say, here are the standards you have to meet, and then they hold them accountable to meeting them. But we don't have that in Michigan, correct?
We don't. And in a place like Massachusetts, the authorizing is very centralized. It's, you know, really the State Department of Education that does pretty much all of it. Here we have, you know, we have dozens of authorizers, and again, there's no mechanism to hold them accountable. Having a lot of authorizers isn't a bad problem if we have performance standards and we have a mechanism to make sure that they're doing their job well. But we just don't have that in place when folks are chronically underperforming. I will say, though, that we do have, there is a way, though, for the state to really provide leadership in the sector, and that is through the State Department of Education. And it's why our organization is calling for the state superintendent, Brian Whiston, to really step up and to use the limited authority that he does have and to really act to ensure that these authorizers are doing a good job for students.
A lot of times what we hear across the state is charter schools are outperforming our traditional public schools. But looking at your report, you kind of put that
out. Lie to it, right? Yeah.
That's not necessarily the case. Talk to us about your findings as far as their performance and where they stack up.
Yeah, so there are some charter schools that are just doing a phenomenal job, and I if I can say just for a moment that our organization is actually governance neutral. We're very supportive of high performing charter schools. They can be one of state's most important tools in high poverty neighborhoods to ensure that kids have access to great public education. But in Michigan, as you were just pointing out, our sector is so weak that the majority of charter schools in Detroit, for example, are fairly low performing. It's shocking how many of them are actually underperforming Detroit public schools. That is not at all what the promise was of charter schools 2 decades ago when they opened in Michigan and said, look, we're opening to provide kids, especially kids of color and poor kids, better school options. I don't think any parent imagined in the state of Detroit when charter schools opened that, wow, I'm going to get dozens of charter schools to choose from, and they're actually worse than DPS, right? I mean, that's been why the system is so broken. And there's a lot of ways that we can work on improving it. I mean, one thing that we're also suggesting is that the state actually invest more money in the really high-quality charter schools. And if we had more high-quality options for parents, not only would more kids be in those schools, but it would also put more pressure on the low performers to improve their game. And there's just not a lot of a pressure on low performing schools right now because there's just not enough really great schools competing with them.
And you're right, they don't have to do anything. They can stay open as long as they want, and there is no oversight that says you got to get better or you have to close. I know you have to run here, Amber, but quickly I want to ask you what the prospect you think is for change in oversight of charters.
Well, I think Jesse could speak to that better in terms of the Detroit legislation and what's happening with that.
Sure.
I think in the short term, we're not tremendously optimistic about changing that, again, in the short term. Although, again, the State Department of Education has had this muscle to hold authorizers accountable in its own limited way, and it just simply hasn't used it. So the department really needs to step up. I mean, they've had that authority for years, right, and have never used it. And so now is really the time for them to step up and use it, especially for kids of color and low-income students. Mm-hmm. In the long run, I think there is potential because I think that even among, the really strong authorizers in the state, and there are many of them, Grand Valley University, Grand Rapids Public Schools, ISDs such as the Washtenaw Intermediate School District, they know that there's an issue, and they could use help in expanding their highest quality charter school options. So I do think that there are leaders out there. There are strong charter school leaders and sector leaders, just as there are in the traditional public sector. And we've got to support them and empower them to grow and to provide more leadership in the issue.
Okay. Amber Arellano, Executive Director of Education Trust Midwest, thank you very much for being here on Detroit Today.
Thanks, Stephen. Thanks, Chastity.
Yeah. So Chastity Pratt-Dossie, let's change the subject here to the governor's budget and education. There's more money in the budget for schools. There's a lot of trumpeting going on around him and people in his administration about those numbers. But what I hear from schools and what I hear from universities in particular mm-hmm. is it's not as much money as we think it is.
Right. just on the K-12 part of his budget message, talking about, okay, we're going to increase the school aid fund, and school districts going to get anywhere from $50 to $120 more per pupil. And that sounds like good news.
Yeah.
But on the
it's
other,
an increase.
It's an increase. At the same time, your benefits packages for your staff and your retirement and all that is going up as well. And the thing that I'm hearing a lot from your lesser funded school districts is, okay, this is more money, but it's not doing very much to close the gap between the lower funded school districts and the higher funded school districts. You have school districts like Benton Harbor, Flint. They're 7,400, 7,600 per student. But, you look at other school districts, of course, we know the Hold Harmless districts are still at 11,000-12,000. So even when you give everyone a bump up, it doesn't really close the gap between the lower funded districts and the higher funded districts, all of whom have these costs of retirement plans, retirement costs and benefits for their teachers. So that's one kind of gray area that's not being addressed.
It's like one step forward and a couple steps back. And we see this over and over again with the funding formula. And I think that the problem is the formula itself, and no one seems to, in Lansing at least, seems to want to deal with that.
Absolutely no political will at this point to take on Proposal A.
Yeah. $72 million for DPS from the tobacco settlement. Quickly here, we've only got about 2 minutes left, but is that enough? Why wasn't this something the governor did last year, for instance?
Right. Last year he said, let's take it out of the school aid fund, and right. Everyone balked at that.
<That's right. laughs>
There's a lot of questions. Why isn't he taking it out of the general fund? We got $500 million sitting over there.
We
do. $72 million a year from the tobacco settlement money would go to pay DPS's long-term debts over the next 10 years.
It's 10 years, right.
Yeah. And that's being proposed. But also, you got some Democrats like Senator Hopgood thinking, okay, yeah, that's a good idea. However, what are we going to have today? We're going to have the Senate Republicans come out with their own idea. It's going to they're going to have a meeting today, I think at 10:30, and propose their own ideas for addressing this. I mean, we got the time is ticking for Detroit Public Schools figuring this out.
Yeah.
April, they're going to run out of
money in 2 months, right?
Absolutely. They're going to run out of money in April. But I keep reminding people, you know, just a little analysis for you. They could kick this down the road because they could advance them their state aid payments and buy themselves some time. Not sure if that's going to happen because all eyeballs right now are on this fix.
Yeah. What about the lottery? People ask all the time, isn't that lottery money supposed to be going to schools? And how come they're always in trouble?
I feel obliged to talk about this every time the budget comes up because somebody's going to say, we spent a lot of money on those Mega Millions
tickets. That's right.
On the daily three. Where's that money going? Folks, that's only 5% of our budget for schools.
Yeah, it's not enough.
It's not enough. This is a $12, $13 billion problem.
Yeah. And eventually we will get to, and 1 week when we have you in here, we'll talk about this adequacy study, this sufficiency study, of how different school districts should be funded. That, I think, is going to lead us to examining some of these things. You know, the lottery, the increases, why none of it is really enough, and that we need to...
Or what is enough?
We need to think differently about this whole
thing. Yes, what is enough?
Yeah. All right, Chastity Pratt-Dawsey, reporter with Bridge Magazine. Thank you for being here again on Detroit Today. We'll see you next week.
See you next week.
All right, that's going to do it for us today. I will be back tomorrow. I hope you will too. This is 101.9 WDET Detroit, Wayne State's public radio station. I'll see you tomorrow.